Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 5th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know how often we get people like saying, hey, you should mix up the intro once in a while and change it once in a while. And I'm like, I do, don't I? I mean, am I missing something here?
Well, I think they might mean more than just switching the words around.
but they did say that. They're like, you know, if you could just say like the best show like in the world or something. And I'm like, but I do say stuff differently. Like, so I don't know. Maybe I'm going to do it in Italian next week or something. I don't know. I'll throw everybody off.
Arrivederci.
Hey, you said that pretty good, dude.
It's like the only Italian word I know.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm sure you know pasta.
Yeah.
So it's good to have you back.
Marinara.
Marinara.
That means me just walking around Italy just shouting out random English-ized words.
Oh, man. All right, so come on. Let's get on with it here. You're back from a successful cruise, right?
Attempt to speak the language and they take care of you. Yes, back for the cruise. It was a great cruise, you know, it really was. It's our second time sailing out of L.A. Numbers weren't as great as we were hoping, but good. But the folks that we had played, like, nonstop, so it was awesome. So cool. We had a lot of good play. Passengers were phenomenal, really friendly crowd. Only a couple of repeat passengers time, so all brand new people. I think we made a lot of new friends. Folks that we're going to see on other cruises as well, too.
Okay.
And just had a blast, too, in port. You know, in Mazatlan, we rented this little fishing boat that we did last time and nearly died. You almost got the whole company that day, and you weren't even there.
That's my plan, dude.
Yeah, everybody was like, that was awesome. We were, like, at the top step, and I'm, like, coming down the step, and I'm like, wow, it's really hard to walk on a boat. Oh, bam!
Oh, no.
Flat on my back. Said I missed my head by, like, 2 inches.
Damn!
Yeah. That close.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I kind of messed up my back, and the next day I went on the most awesome shore excursion ever. We did me and two of our dealers did like an extreme like zip lining, rappelling,
wow,
water slide kind of thing, donkey ride, you know, pretty much anything that could scare me, put that in that thing, and it was awesome. I did things I didn't think I could do, including climbing a ladder and totally ripping that same muscle in my back. So
oh, man. That's what I was going to say. How did you even do it with a bad back? And then you do it again.
Pain ever since. Yeah.
Oh,
of course,
man.
Every the next day, like, you know, no, most people would have not spent $140 on a zip lining shore excursion a day after they almost died on the ship.
I know.
That's awesome.
This is why it's so excellent to be in business with you, because I know at any moment I can own the whole company. It's crazy.
But yeah, we had a great time. A lot of cash play tournaments. Really had a good turnout for all of our tournaments too. And so a couple folks, our main event was Chop Four Ways, and but they wanted to play it out, which normally you don't let them play it out. You know, most poker rooms aren't going to let you play it out because now you're taking up staff time and stuff like that.
Right.
But they were insistent that they wanted to play it out for the title and also the jacket. You know, again, at some point somebody turned around because it's the playout went on forever. And someone turned to me and was like, so how expensive is this jacket?
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, people like it. So,
it's personalized, maybe. It's personalized.
It is. But our tournament director was like, all right, if you guys want to play it out, it's going to be 5-minute levels from here on out.
Right.
It's going to be over quickly. Well, was it over quickly? Because these people were holding on to those chips like it was the deck chair on the Titanic, right?
Jeez.
But anyway, I came down to Tim Kahn, one of our few repeat passengers on this cruise from Seattle. He ended up winning it. And runner-up Myrna Peterson, who was absolutely thrilled to have made it that far. And she came over to me afterwards. She's like, are you going to mention me on the show? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I'll try. So, Myrna, here we go. I remember to mention you on the show. So let all your friends listen as you say.
And tell your brother-in-law, Norm, I said hi.
Norm!
Spelled differently, but I don't care. It's worth a joke.
But no, it's great to see people like, it was funny because I've got some like, you know, there's some poker pros that are my Facebook friends too. And a couple of them are like, hey, so how many people do you get for the tournament today? I'm trying to figure out whether I want to come. And I'm like, you don't want to come on our cruise and play these $100 tournaments. This is fun. So if you want to come on and have fun, that's great. And Myrna and Tim and all these people, they had fun. And that's what we like to see.
Yeah.
So congratulations to both of them. And then Joe Massaro, I don't know if you probably would recognize him. I don't know if you remember his name, but he and his wife, Jeannie, have been on a cruise or two with us before. And they just happen to pop up everywhere I am. They came out to the Yandeop World Championship out in California last year, and I walked through the table. I'm like, what are you guys doing here? You still in Florida? I'm like, yeah, we thought we'd come out and see you. I'm like, awesome. So they came on this cruise, us too, and Joe actually cashed in all three tournaments.
I think
he might be the only one to have done that.
Nice.
So he had a good cruise as well, too. So absolutely had a blast and great ports. And it was a newer ship than we had the last time. I went to the Teppanyaki twice. It's nice to be able to Japanese steakhouse on a ship.
Okay. I'm glad you clarified that because I had no idea what the hell you were talking about when you said it. I'm like, what? What's that?
Teppanyaki?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. No idea.
It's a shame. It's the best way to eat.
All right, I'm going to have to check that out now.
You know, they do like a little show in front of you.
I'm sheltered, dude. So it's like, you mean like Arigatos and Benihanas?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that's what you called
it, though. Teppanyaki.
Yeah. See, you know Japanese and I know Italian. There you go. We are worldwide international
podcast. Global operation coming up here pretty soon. Teppanyaki with marinara, please.
Arigato. And then we went to Mexico, so ay caramba.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. But anyhow, so folks, hopefully we'll see you on a future cruise. Remember, we're sailing April out of Port Canaveral. That one's doing pretty well as well, too, so we had a good group for that. And we're going to have some giveaways announced for that shortly. And then, of course, Alaska at the end of August. A lot of the passengers on this cruise were very excited about that, so we'll see that. See how many of them show up on that. And then, of course, our big cruise of the year, the November one out of Tampa. And you go to antiupcruises.com for a lot of that information. And something we tried on this cruise just to see how it worked, and it worked phenomenally. And so I think we're going to continue to do it. We gave everybody $5 off their next cruise for every hour of cash gameplay that they put on this cruise. So I've got a bunch of little index cards here that I got to put in a spreadsheet and find out who's getting a lot of money. But I think there's going to be a couple folks on here that are going to get $200 off their next cruise. Just for playing. And so that's a great little promotion. So if you thought about coming with us and you're thinking about doing two cruises, doesn't do you good if you're just going to do one.
Right.
If you're going to do two cruises and really have a good time, we're making this very affordable for you. So jump on board and take advantage of that awesome offer.
Excellent.
Most generous poker host in the world. And then, of course, you know, I always like to tack on some days when I get on. If I'm going to fly 4 or 5 hours somewhere, I'm going to make it worth it, right?
Yeah.
So I stopped the night before out at Sandia Resort in Albuquerque. Been there a couple times. Great, great place. And we're very excited that we will be hosting a soon-to-be-announced Antioch Poker Tour series over Labor Day weekend. Still working on that announcement language, but that will be out pretty soon. But you can go ahead and mark it down for Labor Day. So I went out and visited the new manager there and got to see the property again. And that's going to be a great event in New Mexico.
Sweet.
And I spent a couple days in Hollywood. Had a good time there. Didn't make it into any commercials or movies, sorry.
So
I'm back to this miserable existence company with you. But I tried.
You were going to be, you know, the next Steve Buscemi, I thought.
Well, still a chance, I guess. I mean, Rodney Dangerfield didn't become a star until he was like 70.
Yeah, there you go, so...
I got time. And then on the way home, for whatever reason, you know, here's the thing. I was on the honor roll in high school, right?
Yeah.
Graduated cum laude from college.
Wow.
Stayed in a Holiday Inn Express. I'm a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, you're pretty smart, yeah.
Not really sure what possessed me to stop for two nights in a blinding snowstorm in Denver after I was just on a Mexican beach for a week. But I did it. Actually, I want to go up there and, you know, I've been to Black Hawk, the two big gaming areas that are Black Hawk and Cripple Creek. And I haven't been to Cripple Creek before, and Midnight Row is one of the casinos there. They actually sent some players on the cruise, and they were phenomenal players. I had so much fun getting to know them. So I'm like, yeah, well, I'll stop and go down and see the manager there, Jeff Peck, and thank him in person, and kind of check out the casino. And it's a really, really neat area there. You know, if folks have been to Deadwood before, that's what I kind of compared it to. It looks like Deadwood. It's like all these old 1850s kind of gambling parlors or halls.
Yeah, yeah.
Down the street. And a really nice little tourist area. It was, unfortunately, it was very snowy and a blizzard when I was there. So I didn't really enjoy the drive very much, and nobody else really did either, I don't think. But you come back there in a good time of year, and I think it's great. And definitely swing by the Midnight Rose, which has the biggest poker room in Cripple Creek, and tell them that Annie Yip sent you. and then from there, I went up and made a stop, repeat visit to Blackhawk, which, again, a great little poker destination, because there's literally like the 4 or 5 poker rooms there, you could roll down the hill. So it was like 16 degrees out, but I was able to walk with just my Annie Yip hoodie from casino to casino because it was that close. And so it was good to see what's going on there, and hopefully we'll be doing some more business there. But one thing that always amazes me is that, you know, because when I travel, you get on the Bravo poker app just to see what games are going at different places. Actually, I met with one of the managers that said that there's a competing product that's actually making big inroads. So there might be a second product for us to download app pretty soon. So that's one interesting thing that came out of this trip. But you always like to see what games are going on. And in Colorado, they have this $100 max bet, right?
Yeah.
So you can play whatever you want, but you can only bet $100 at a time. And it used to be like $5, so you can imagine how terrible poker was before that.
Right, it's like,
but now it's $100.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I asked a couple of the managers, I'm like, does it really play any differently than, you know, a 1-2 no limit anywhere else? I mean, obviously, you know, if you've got deep stacks, it plays differently because you can only bet 100 at that point. But I don't see a lot of more than $100 bets usually. Do you?
No, not really. I mean, somebody's going all in, they might have the stacks like 300 in front of them to go all in, and somebody has more than that they cover, but for the most part, yeah, the most regular just bets early on and middle of the hand and stuff like that, yeah, never more than 100, really.
Yeah, so I think for a recreational player, I don't think it's all that different than what you would normally play. But at the Ameristar there, they've had this game going forever. It's amazing when you click on there, because usually, it depends where you are, you see, okay, 1-2 no limit, 6 tables, you know, 4-8 limit, 2-4 limit, whatever, right? Here, it's 1-2 no limit and 30-60 limit. Half kill.
Wow.
And I remember they had this game before, and I totally forgot they had it, but now, and they get 5 tables of that on the weekends, Chris.
Wow. That's insane.
And when I was there, it was a snowstorm. Like, there's like one table at two, at the other 3 poker rooms in the table, 1-2, and there they had 2 30-60 games going.
Oh, man.
No one was in town. Just idiots from Florida and people that live like close enough that they aren't going to die driving the canyon. But they had 2 full 30-60 games. They went around the clock.
Wow. And the half kill makes it 45-90, so they stay underneath 100. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I didn't think about that. You're right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but he says people love it. There's a lot of money on the table, and those people are regulars. They've been there forever, and Ameristar takes good care of them. So at one point, I was like, you know, hey, so it must be a time rate game. And he's like, no, not allowed to do time rate in Colorado.
Oh.
So the standard $5 rate with $2 jackpot drop in that game versus in any other game. So, you know, we had that a couple weeks ago. We had that listener that was sent in is like, I'm having trouble beating this 3-6 limit or 4-8 limit game, right?
Right.
Answer was, you know, hey, the rake is the same between that and anything else. So imagine this. You're playing 30-60 and you're paying the same rake as the people in the 4-8 game.
Yeah.
Phenomenal deal if you could play that big. And trust me, I was tempted. I had a bunch of cash for the cruise ship and like, oh, okay. Like, nope, not going to do it. That's going to be a tough That's sort of tell Chris. I mean, I got totally jacked in the parking lot, man. Sorry.
And by parking lot, he means a 30-60 there.
But very interesting. So
that's cool.
Folks are looking to check out poker. Those two great cities in near Denver are perfect. I would just suggest not in the middle of a snowstorm.
Yeah, not in a snowstorm. Which means you can only play for about 3 weeks over there. So I'm just kidding.
Four, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, well, a lot of stuff happened while I was gone, too, and we're not going to get to it all on this show, but the American Poker Award nominees came out, and this is the second annual one. They're going to be handed out February 25th in Beverly Hills, California, and you can see the full list at AmericanPokerAwards.com. But we'll just kind of talk about a couple of them here. I'm going to start off by just saying, I'm happy for all these people. I think all these are deserving. The tournaments, the players, all that are all deserving, so I'm not trying to take anything away from them. But for the second year in a row, it's a very Vegas, California-centric list.
Yes.
And it kind of bothers me, I guess, because it's the American Poker Awards, and I'm on the road a lot. I go all over America watching poker, and there's good poker being played by good people in good rooms all across America, and not just in Vegas and L.A. and South Florida. And that's really all that I'm seeing on this list.
And it goes back to the heart of why we started our show and magazine. Because when we first started it, we're like, you know what? We're never going to get into a card player. We're never going to get into a bluff.
Right, right.
And we do some things that we think are worthy of acknowledgement. And I think a lot of our players do. We got a pretty decent poker scene here in Florida when we first started this thing. And we're like, hey, you know, recognize everyone, not just the guys who have $1 million in the bank who play this game for a living. And that's why we started it. And this list is exactly like that. That's what Card Player was. Card Player was a Vegas, California magazine. It still is. And that's fine. If that's what they want to do and be the pros and all that, that's fine. That's their niche, and our niche is what we do. But this American Poker Award, you call it American, and, you know, you're right. South Florida, at least we got South Florida in there because they're forcing their hand by, you know, having these huge tournaments at Hollywood. But you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more.
I mean, look at it. If you could have the tournament performance of the year, all of them were in at the World Series of Poker or WPT in L.A.
Right.
Moment of the year, all of them at the World Series of Poker or the WPT in L.A. The events of the year, one, the WPT Deep Stacks in Canada, but the rest were all Vegas.
Right.
And event of the year over 2000, all in Vegas except for the Seminole Hard Rock Showdown in Hollywood, Florida, which for all intents and purposes is just a big event that just happens to be in Florida.
Right.
I mean, it's in Florida. Industry people of the year are all, you know, Florida or Vegas based. The charitable initiatives of the year are all, you know, one-offs in Vegas for the most part. And then the innovation. Look at the innovation innovative of the year. I mean, Poker Central launched the 24/7 television network. I really hope that wins because that is truly innovating.
Right.
Waiting for that for a while.
Right.
But then the other two are World Series Poker Tournament events.
Yeah.
I don't know really how you change that. And, you know, maybe it's different people on the nominating committee. Or maybe different categories that really kind of force into the heartland of America. But not, that's what I was kind of disappointed about.
Yeah, and not being a selfish person or anything. I'm just saying the charitable initiative of the year, you're right, there are one-offs, every one of them. But ours is nationwide, actually North America-wide. But would we ever be considered for something like this? Of course not. And it's ridiculous.
Well, maybe we will. We'll see. It's only second year for our Restock the Shelves.
Right, but initiative, you know, charitable initiative of the year makes it sound like, I know what an initiative is, but it makes it sound like it's something that happened that year or newer that year or something of that nature.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the way it makes it sound. And most of these, except for the One Drop, which is only a couple of years old too, 3 years maybe. But, you know, these are all one-offs that just happened that 1 year, you know? So, okay, where do we fit?
I guess a couple of them are. I mean, like the Chad Brown's been around 2 years now.
And yeah, that's what I mean. We've been around 2 years.
Poker Night's been around for a while as well, too. So I wouldn't say that, but I mean, they're one night events.
Right.
It's great, but, you know, but I think there's other things even beyond our Restock that are longer term things that I think that do really well.
I just don't want it to turn into another Hall of Fame thing where we don't even get considered to be considered. You know what I mean?
I'm not so worried about that so much. I want to see it be broader, though.
Want
to really reflect American poker, and American poker these days is not Vegas, LA, and South Florida. Those are still the three biggest areas by far, obviously.
Right.
But
right.
There's a lot of good poker being played elsewhere. I mean, actually, to be honest, if anybody should be upset, I would think it'd be Northeast rooms. I mean, there's nothing from Parks, nothing from Atlantic City, Borgata, anything.
Foxwoods, yeah.
Yeah. And those are big areas as well, too, doing good stuff. So, but anyhow, so we'll wait and see who wins on February 25th, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again. But they can go to American Poker Awards if you want to see that list.
All right. Any updates? We got Ameristar Vicksburg in Mississippi is awarding an Antiup Poker cruise package for our April 18th sailing to the Bahamas at 11 p.m. every Wednesday from February 17th through March 16th. Players can earn tickets by getting a flush or better all week long. For more information on all of our Antiup Poker cruises, go to antiupcruises.com. And don't forget about our Pape series. It's the online fans playing that. It's funny because I'm invited to those. And when I check my email, I check it so often that, you know, when you see the little downloading, it's always like downloading one of two or one of one, you know. But whenever I get downloading six of six, I know the Pape series is right around the corner and our good friend John Somsky is setting up the schedule. And I just got it, I think, last night or night before. But anyway, the Pape series is they hold events on all dates ending with a six. So the next events are February 6th, 16th, and 26th. And details can be found at any Up Nation events group discussion on PokerRadius.com.
Yeah, I want to get back in those. And I just, unfortunately, I always think about it the next day when I get the results. I'm like, oh!
Oh, don't!
It's
a six. How can you forget?
Yeah,
it's
a six. I know. That was all my idea a long time ago, and I forgot now. So, but I'm hoping to get back. Now that I'm back off the road, maybe I'll be able to play one of these.
All right. Each week, we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Foreign Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Allen, Maryland. At the beginning of tournaments, some rooms put out stacks regardless of whether a player has arrived at the seat. Other rooms don't put stacks out until there is a body in the seat, regardless of when he or she shows up, and with no posting penalty either, he says. This seems much fairer to me for the following scenario. In a room where some or all stacks go out at the beginning to empty seats, player A buys in 1 hour before the start, perhaps to avoid waiting in line, but arrives at the table 45 minutes after the start. He had a fine meal in the interim. His stack has been partially blinded or anteed off. Player B buys in 45 minutes late, sits down at the exact same time as player A, yet sits down to a full stack. This makes no sense. The only effect is to penalize early buy-ins. Having, quote, dead stacks on the table is a time waster and is a pain for dealers, especially those coming from cash tables who have to adjust from dealing to bodies to dealing to stacks. Lots of misdeals. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a topic at the Poker TDA Summit the last couple of years, and I think two summits ago, which would have been 2 years ago, they made a big push to get folks to quit putting out dead stacks. So only put a stack out once that seat is purchased. Now, it's kind of be clear here, once it's purchased, that stack goes out. So in Al's example here, player A, nothing changes here because player A has already bought in, so his stack goes out whether he's sitting there or not. Mm-hmm. But player B and his stack will be blinded out. But player B would get a full stack when he sits down. So it used to be before that if you bought in late, they took the blinds away from you. So if you miss seven blinds, you're going to sit down and you're going to start with the stack that has seven fewer blinds in it. Now you get a full stack when you buy it. And almost all poker rooms that at least follow TDA. The net effect, as he mentioned, is no one likes to have two people at a table with a bunch of stacks fighting over dead blinds, right?
Right.
So it kind of avoids that. Obviously, if you only have two people at the table, then two of you are playing heads up for a while. So there is potential for a problem, but most rooms, I think, are very smart in figuring that out and moving you to another table right away to avoid that, so at least you have some other competition. The really good rooms have figured this out, too, where they hold back a couple seats, so they only sell seven seats or six seats to each table initially and then fill it in with players that come late, so that way there's enough people at the table to start and not have to have the dead stacks. But yeah, I guess his other point, though, is if you buy in early, you shouldn't be penalized, and that's true. The only way that player in his scenario is being penalized is because he goes to get a meal instead of sitting at the table.
Right.
You're not being penalized. And get there on time.
And there's always the other side of it, too. A lot of people will say, well, it's not fair that one table gets to keep raising and stealing blinds and building their stack that way while I'm over here playing with a full table of actual competitors. But then there's also the other thing, too, that you know they don't have a chance to actually get the entire stack from that person getting involved in a hand with them. So you can always look at it at both ways, too, both sides
of the
story.
Yeah, I would say the first time I sat down at a table with a bunch of dead stacks, I thought this was awesome. I'm like, we're just going to be picking up blinds left and right. And it's not really.
No, it's not.
It's really boring. It's you don't get anything out of it. You end up with overplaying your hands against the one or two guys that are alive there because you know you widen up your range, right?
Right.
And you get in trouble. I much prefer to play with full table of actual real humans. So I think the big reason that the rooms have gotten away from putting out the dead stacks is now you're introducing tournament ships into the tournament that haven't been paid for. And that's a problem, I think.
Yes, that's true, too. You know, they take the stacks away. Yep, you're right.
Exactly. This way, chips do not go on the table until someone paid for those chips to go on the table.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That's a great point. Hey, guess what? We get to complete O'Malley's move today. Very exciting. Here we go. We're going to remind ourselves with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing a bit above our comfort level in a game we don't know too well, $2, $5 Pot Limit Omaha. We've already lost one buy-in and are down 100 with our second. The table is six-handed and we definitely are one of the more inexperienced Pot Limit Omaha players. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, it's folded to us on the button with $400 and the ace of hearts, queen of spades, 9 of spades, 7 of hearts. We have a suited ace and some semi-connecting cards. A standard raise in this game is 3x, but we account for the limper and make it $20 to go. The big blind raises us to $50. The under-the-gun calls, as do we. Both players have us covered. With 150 in the pot, the flop brings us a nut hand with the 9 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 7 of clubs. The big blind checks, as does the under the gun, and with 150 in the pot, we make it an even 100 to go, leaving us 250 behind. The big blind folds, but the under the gun calls. With 350 in the pot, the turn is the 10 of clubs. The under the gun asks me for a count. We oblige, and after thinking for a while, he announces his bet. 250. So, we have an under full. Are we calling all in? What's the move?
Well, Pot Limit Omaha is not for the weak of heart, and I tell this to our crews. You know, I do my Omaha class. I did it on this last cruise, and, I kept saying, all right, they play PLO at home. And I'm like, sir, do not play PLO when you go home. You're going to play Limit Omaha for years until you get comfortable with it. Then maybe you'll stick it to PLO. Because it is. It really is a big game, and there's a lot going on, and the smart players are much smarter than the not-so-smart players as they are in a hold'em game. So I'm going to say here, with all the card combinations available, it's really hard to know whether someone just two or three outed us here or improved in some other way that is good for us. But the rule in PLO is always to have a redraw, and our redraw here consists nothing more of the remaining 9, so that's not really a good redraw. But if our opponent does have 10-10 or something like that, why bet? The flush and straight's already got there, so he's not protecting his hand, so he has a little to fear by giving us a free card. I'm going to make the call.
Yeah, I'm going to call, too, because really, what 10-10 hand sticks around after that huge flop bet, too? That was the other thing I thought of. It was like, only a straight flush has us beat at that moment after that bet, so if you remove pocket 10, so would 8 of clubs, 6 of clubs, 8 of clubs, jack of clubs. Would they have called? Maybe, but not. That was a pretty big bet on that flop to have those cards to stick around for one more card to see, because you know you're going to get bet out of the pot if it doesn't get there. So I'm going to call too.
Yeah, and it's PLO too, so once it's a paired board, people don't even really stick around flush right. Straight draws.
Either. Yeah, so crazy. Yep. All right, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. The not so wonderful underfull. This leak in my game needs to be plugged up fast. I always struggle folding under fulls in Omaha. We're losing to 3 hands, 9s full of 10s, 10s full of 9s, and a straight flush. If I were a better player, I may have been able to fold, but we make the call.
Our opponent turns over the King of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs, Ten of Spades, Nine of Diamonds. The river is the Three of Hearts, and we decide not to waste a third buy-in. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, don't play in games that are above your comfort level. It only leads to a depleted bankroll and questions about your abilities as a poker player. I hope to see you on the film.
That's a tough beat. But I'm going to give our opponent credit here for betting when I didn't think it made sense for him to do. I mean, if we were way behind, he should have wanted us to catch up, so there's no reason to bet, right? And if he thought we had what we did, the 9-7, there's no reason to assume that we wouldn't bet. Obviously, we were going to bet that, right?
Yeah.
And then we could have check-raised to get more of our stack. So I think he obviously got the best of us. He won the pot. But I think he lost some value against us.
Yeah, probably. You know, the thing was, when we were talking about it in part one, I never even really considered the case 9 being out because I was thinking, even if it was out, we still have the nuts. So when the turn got there, I wasn't thinking 9-10, which is really odd because that's my favorite hand.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm thinking, okay, maybe he has ace-9 in his hand. Or something like that, because why would he stick around? Then when I thought even 3-9s were still ahead of that, so in the 9-10, I didn't even think about that. And that's
part of the reason the PLO is so hard.
It really is. You know, here we are. We have a whole week to look at and listen to this hand played out, and I never even come up with 9-10 for some reason. I don't know why. And that's the other thing, too. It does happen when you're playing sometimes. You're focused on, I have the nuts. And then the turn comes, you don't even think, you think, what's going to beat my 9? And you think, it's got to be 10s full of it because I have the other 9. Yeah. I wasn't even thinking of the case 9. So that's why this game is so hard, too, because there's so many cards, so many possibilities. You really have to focus on it. And normally, you and I would never even miss that 9-10. But just the way the hand came down and that it's broken up over 2 weeks and, yeah, what a shame. I mean, we had him dead to rights. We had him dead to a 9 king or 10. Or 9, king,
well, yeah,
queen,
I mean,
or 10.
Once you see his hand, I can see why he was in at that point. I mean, obviously, he had to be a little cautious because we could have what we did, which was 9-7, or we could also have an ace 9, and that's better in it.
Behind.
But, I mean, I think what people do in Omaha, and that's what you think about, you know, if I hit one of my other cards, if he hits any one of his cards, a king, queen, or 10, he beats us if we have 9-7, which is what we had.
Yeah.
And he beats us if we have the ace 9, you know, unless an ace comes as well too. So there's definitely a reason to call there, and then he got it. So, but I still, it's weird that he would bet out on that because obviously he had to think that either we had the underboat already and it has us crushed and we're going to bet. You know, there's no reason for. I mean, look how easy it was for us to kind of overlook that. And even if we thought about that, I don't think I would have been. If he's checking me, I'm still betting there, right?
Right.
My boat.
Yep.
So there's no reason not to for him to bet out like that. You know, and if we have nothing, if we were just kind of bluffing, oh, hey, maybe no one's going to 9, I'm going to bluff this flop. He's not going to get any more money out of us anyhow, unless he lets us catch up somehow.
Yeah.
And really, at that point, you know, it would have to be a big pocket pair card coming to beat us on the last card. So,
and it goes to show you just how legit our analysis really is, that we're not going ahead and listening to part two and then just giving our thoughts to try to be right. I mean, there's no way you and I would write it the way we did and talk about it the way we have. If we had known 9-10 was out, we look foolish. So we look foolish, and that's what happens in this game. Sometimes you look foolish.
Foolish,
you
know, in Omaha.
Yeah, you got to really, really concentrate in this game and remember everything. And so, yeah, that's a tough hand.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Our old friend Adam Borgoring.
I'm going to say Bergen is what I'm going to say.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I think he's already like sent us like 12 emails on how to say his name.
I'm sure we've never got it right.
It's a running joke.
Right, yeah, exactly. All right, so he says, I just got back. First of all, he says, hello, gentlemen. Boy, he really does not know us.
Yeah. Right? Well, we don't know his name, so he doesn't know us either.
Right.
So
it's all fair, right?
Yeah.
All right, he says, he just got back from playing 1-2 No Limit Hold'em Cash Games at Mohegan.
Yay!
Remember, we have an Antioch Poker Tour coming up there April 2nd to 10th. And you know what? I forgot to put this on the show notes because it came in late, but they just announced discount room rates. So if you go to annieupmagazine.com/MohicanSun, you'll get all the information on that upcoming series, including those discount room rates. So call and get a room, because it looks like that resort's absolutely fantastic. I haven't stayed there yet, but
sweet.
Looking forward to it. So go there and get a discount because you know, Scott sent you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so anyhow, so he just got back from playing a 1-2 No Limit Hold'em cash game session there. And he says, a little backstory to my night. I initially just went with $200 and sat down, lost it all in my first hand. Embarrassing and annoying. Hey, we've all been there, buddy. Given that it's an hour drive each way for me, I decided to drop another $200 on the table just to work back up to $400. After some ups and downs, I'm sitting with about $275 when his hand comes up. All right?
All right.
So we got our teeth kicked in on the first table. And made it back some much, and then fell back a little bit. So, this table's a fun table, everyone having a good time with mostly solid play. The hand happens against probably the best player at the table. He raises to $10 from middle position after it's folded to him. The button and small blind both call, and we are in the big blind with 4-5 of diamonds.
Hmm. Well, as long as we have the right mindset, I'll call. You know, you're down 200, you know, you're back up to 275, so you know you've got 125 to go before you're even. You know, I just want to make sure that we're not on tilt and just trying to make anything happen on any two cards and getting it in trouble. So as long as we know, let's hit this pretty hard and try to stack somebody with a check raise or something, then I'll consider calling. But if I'm in the wrong set of mind or whatever, you know, I might even just let it go, but that's a lot of money out there for 4-5 of diamonds and only 8 more bucks. So it's a sneaky hand. I know you're in the blinds, but it's not like you're in the blinds and then limping to the flop. It's a raise, so they're going to give you some credit for something. So I guess I'll call and hope I hit it pretty well.
Yeah, I kind of like this spot because it is a stackable hand, right? If we
go
straight, mostly if you're straight, but flush possible as well too. Although you'd be scared about that. So it's a stackable hand, which is what you're looking for in No Limit Hold'em. But for me, the big reason is that I'm closing out the betting.
Yes.
You know, I don't have to worry about putting that $10 in and then having a guy after me make it 100 to go or something and then have to fold the hand and lose $10. So that's kind of the decider for me is here. I put the $10 in. I know I'm going to see a flop now. And then from there, I'm going to be cautious. But I have a high potential hand here.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, our hero says, I figure that I'm priced in. I'm not really sure about that, but...
Well, I mean, he is getting a lot on his money.
He is, but I don't know if he's forced to by...
No, but he's getting 4-1 on his money, so or something like that, so...
He says, and I know exactly what I need to hit, so I call. All right, there we go. So discipline.
He's got discipline. Yeah, he's disciplined. So, okay, that's good.
Flop comes 6, tray 9 with 2 spades.
I'm going to check. I'm not going to bet and then have the guy behind me re-raise me and raise me out of this. And like I said, we're already down 125 at this point. You know, I mean, less now. More, I mean, now it's 135 because we put 10 out there. I'm not going to go crazy and bet because there's no way we're going to take it down with a bet here when you had somebody raising who's going to want to. And if it's the best player, like you said, at the table, he's not just going to fold over for $20 or whatever. So I really want to just see what he makes it and see what everybody else does behind me. Because, again, if the guy who made the raise in middle position bets out, likely it'll get to us and we'll close out betting again. And if it doesn't, then we know we can get out of this hand too, because if somebody re-raises him to 100 or something, I'm not going into 100 with this. With two spades out there and not even really just 5 high. So
right.
I like a check here.
No, I would be interested from one of our listeners that advocates a bet here, because I'm not seeing much upside to it. So, I mean, for me, one, our hand is very hidden here. Obviously, it's a big blind, but we called a raise, as you mentioned, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little harder to put us on 4-5 here. So our hand's hidden, I like. The other thing, too, is we bet out here, a bunch of stuff could go wrong. One, we can get raised, as you mentioned, and then we have to get a lot of money in here on this draw. And even if our draw gets there, there's two spades out there. So what if one of our cards that hits is a spade? Then you can't be comfortable, right?
Right.
So either he raises us, or if not, it's just a call. And now everybody's going to be looking to us to continue the bet on the turn, right? So what happens if we miss?
Yeah. Now you're wasting money.
Right. So now are we forced to bet again to keep up the thing? And that's where you get in trouble with the small blind, big blind hands, I think, is you're like, all right, I became the big kahuna here, so now I got to stay the big kahuna. And that's really difficult to play with. So I'm quite happy just check calling here. letting people guess what I have. You know, we could represent spades as well, too, by not betting out here, too.
Right.
Really hard for us to represent spades if we bet out here.
Right.
So, I'm definitely checking.
Okay.
All right, so that's what we did, and everyone checked.
Ooh. So,
free card for everyone.
Wow.
Our hero says, turn is a semi-beauty, the seven of spades.
Oh, of course, right? Bittersweet.
Yep, yeah.
Of course. So, we got a straight, but the flushes get there, so...
And apparently, I think small blind's still in here, doesn't say, but it's on us.
Yeah, because everyone checked, right, and he called earlier, so... Well, I think we have to bet here, because you have to protect against four spades. And if somebody, especially the raiser preflop, had a spade draw before this card, he would have bet. Because he raised preflop, he had command of the hand. So if he had a spade draw, he would have bet. If the other guys had spade draws, they might have bet. They might not have, but I think we need to get that money out there to see. Because you don't want a four card now beating your straight. You know, the odds of the spades getting there and not one of those people betting their spade draw. You know, it's usually someone bets their spade draw, especially right. The raiser. So I'm going to make a bet, you know. I'll bet half the pot or so.
Well, the good thing about this bet, too, is that they don't know whether it's spades or not. They're probably going to assume it's spades, right?
Yeah, because no one thinks you're on 4-5, probably.
Right. So, you know, obviously it could get dangerous if somebody actually has spades and raises us. But now we know. I mean, if I think you're right, I think it's too dangerous to let them take another free card and get that 4-card flush.
Right. I mean, 8-5 and 8-10 also get there for straights, but those are hands that you really can't put somebody on for a raise.
Yeah, much different margin.
Right. So...
But again, I mean, people could put those hands on us, too, right?
I guess. I mean, I guess we're in the blind, but...
So either way, I mean, what we're doing here is getting rid of the weaker hands before they have a chance to become better hands.
Right. And hope if somebody just calls, you might think they got a single spade in their hand.
Right. All right. We decided to check, and the villain bets $15 in the $40 pot, and it folds to us.
Hmm. All right, well, I feel like we need to raise then, because I really feel like if this guy has the flush, he would have bet the flop, because he was the guy who was a villain, so he's the one who raised preflop then.
Yeah.
I really don't believe this. I think he might have a high spade, you know? I feel like he might have a high spade in his hand, and that's why he did it, because why didn't he bet that flop when he took control of his hand and got a flush draw? So if he didn't have a flush draw, then we have the nuts here. There's no way this guy has his beat. So I'm going to raise here and force him to pay more to hit that one spade in his hand on the river.
I'm a little confused by the size of the bet. I mean, it's $15, so it almost seems like he wants a call. And if he wants a call, that means he has the flush, right? And if he has the flush, then I don't understand why he didn't bet that flop.
Yeah, so I don't think he has it, so that's why I have to raise
it. I'm really confused, actually.
I think he's bluffing. He knows everyone checked around.
But it's a weird bluff. I mean, if you're bluffing there, wouldn't you put 30 in or 20 at least? I mean, I know it's only an extra 5, but
maybe,
it seems like an odd bet.
Well, here's the deal, and I see what you're saying. I wonder if it's more like the Scott Long thing where you always say, if everyone checks the flop and then it all checks around to you again, you put some money out there no matter what.
Right, yeah, you're going to win.
And I think he's thinking, this is a weak table. Everyone's checking and any amount of money is going to do it. So why risk more than 15 to take down a spot?
Right. Okay.
Because don't forget, it is the turn. So he's only betting 2/3, which is what normally you would do. But when the pot has grown after
he's not even betting half. 15 into a $40 pot.
What'd I say? I'm sorry. He was betting a third, I mean. I'm sorry. So that's generally what you would bet after a flop. You'd bet half the pot or so. He's almost betting half. I think he's trying to get away with stealing it is what it feels like to me. Because if he had the flush, he would have bet. Yeah. So I'm going to raise his ass.
All right. Raise his ass.
I'm going to make it like 45-50 now.
All right. Let's see. He says the bet took him a bit to put in, which tells me he was either not sure about it or he's trying to figure out what will get him paid. I want more info, and we won't gain anything by calling, so I raised to $45.
Okay, that's what I agree to. That. That's about right.
He tanks! Actually, I wrote it.
How many A's in that tanks?
It's a lot. Yeah. It's kind of one of those eye chart things, and you start counting, and all of a sudden they become one big A.
Oh, jeez.
It's a lot.
Tanks!
And painfully makes the call. All right, well, now we just got to worry about that spade, it seems like.
Right? Yeah, it feels like he's got one spade in his hand.
Either that or he's a white guy because he's nominated for an Oscar award.
Ah, very good. There you go. Way to be current, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. all right. Makes the call. So the river is the Queen of Hearts. So our final board is, I got to figure this out. 6, 3, 9, 7, Queen with 3 spades.
I think we're good. I really think we're good here. So there was 45 and 45. That's 100 plus the original. So I'd probably bet like 75, 80 or something like that.
All right.
I'm really confident.
Feeling pretty good here, right?
Yeah, I really don't think this guy has got me, especially the way he played it.
Okay. Our hero says, I'm about 80% sure he doesn't have the flush, given the agony he had on his face while tanking. That's just tanking. And calling my raise. I confidently put in $75 and settle in for another tank, which of course happens.
Hmm.
He ends up making the call. I quietly table my straight, and he states...
Should
have been stares.
Okay.
He stares at me confused before mucking. We never find out what he has. Set or two pair, maybe the flush draw, but given the board, flush draw couldn't have been too strong. Thoughts? And he says, in mandatory brag, just for Chris, I did end up cashing $119 in profit.
Yes! Well, to me, the set seems like a bit much. That's a real wet board to not bet that flop. So if he had his set of nines, set of sixes, set of threes, trays, whatever, I feel like he would have bet that. That's a wet board for two blinds to be in the hand with him, two spades to be there. So by not betting, did he really turn a set of sevens? And that's why he didn't bet, because he's afraid of the nine? I still think he bets that flop with a pair of sevens pre-flop raise. So... I really don't think it was a set. It felt like a pair of tens. Or eights. It felt like eights, really. Because eights might be afraid of the nine, which is why he didn't bet. And then the turn was another undercard. Now he's got a straight draw. So it feels like maybe it was a pair of eights to me. That's what I'm going to put him on, eights. And then that's why he called. And the queen, he's like, I'm going to call here because if you had a queen, you didn't hit any of this. And you don't have the flush or the straight, you know, because he would have bet it. So I feel like... it's eights, and he lost.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what he had, but I think the fact that he was staring confused at your hand was that he was expecting to see spades, right?
Yeah, probably.
And then he's like, four or five. Maybe I got that beat. Maybe it's a point. Oh, no. So I think that was it. So, I mean, he could have, you know, wide range things there, but I think that's why he was confused.
Yeah.
I would totally expect you to be turning over spades when I made that call then.
Yeah, when he sees four or five, or the other thing, too, is he was expecting to see ace nine.
Yeah. Isn't it the worst thing, too, when it happens when you make this, like, hero call, and the person turns over the hand, and you're like, whoa, is that what I thought? And then all of a sudden you see the chips being pushed that way.
And you're like, you're like, what the hell?
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's got five high. How did I not win?
Worse, you know, because you already resigned yourself to losing. And then you get that glimmer of hope. And then, no, crushing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
And even crushed harder, because now you realize you didn't read the table. Right?
So yeah.
Didn't realize all the ways you couldn't get beat. You just focused on the one you could.
Yeah, you totally didn't see 9-10 out there for O'Malley's move. All right, Adam, make sure you return the Mohegan Sun for April 2nd to the 10th for our Antia Poker Tour. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antia is a production of AntiaMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.